Cape Talk, health and wellness.
Great pleasure to welcome Dr. Darren Green to our makeshift studio here at the Norval Foundation. And Darren, we're going to be talking about joints and pain management and arthritis. But before we do that, I've got to ask you about food poisoning, because I've just seen a news article telling us that a woman has died and 18 people are very, very sick after eating in a Michelin-starred restaurant in Spain, in Valencia.
Oh, goodness.
They seem to be pointing the finger at a rice and mushroom dish served at Riff, the name of the restaurant. Food poisoning, something many of us laugh about, take for granted. You live with it and carry on, but somebody's died of it here. What are the signs of when you really need to be worried about it?
I think timing is important. So often, if you have gastric symptoms within an hour after consuming something, that means you could be allergic to the foodstuff rather than have poisoning. So you often have cramping immediately with abdominal pain, and the body then tries to actually rid itself of the thing you're allergic to rather than it being poisoning as such. With poisoning, you generally have about 6 to 12 hours that occurs, a waiting period for the toxin actually to be absorbed from the gut and the GIT and then have its target in the different systems, obviously with the systemic features of fever, abdominal cramping, etc., changing your blood pressure, and then obviously opening the taps where you have then dehydration and hypotension and all the things that go along with that.
Okay, thanks for the, and sorry to divert so off track, but just quite startling. Got more than they bargained for at their Michelin meal. Okay, as I said, we're talking joints today, joints, arthritis, pain management, and it's quite a topical one for me, Darren, because as we sit here, I did a boot camp class this morning. Every joint in my body is aching and creaking, so I'm acutely aware of them. Can we just start with a layman's explanation of what the joints actually are, what their function is, and why are they such a crucial thing to keep healthy for as long as possible?
100%. The musculoskeletal system, obviously comprising of the human skeleton and then muscle itself that's graced or draped on that to ensure that we can actually move the limbs. The functionality of the body in terms of how it's designed and where joints are is quite incredible, to enable all sorts of ranges of motion behind your head, in front of your head, behind your back, in front of you, bending down, etc. So the joints, you can imagine, the way that we are structured as a human species to move on two legs is quite fascinating in terms of that. But along with that comes then obviously the issue of being adapted for the task that you perform every day. Like boot camp, for example, was the task you performed today and maybe yesterday too. And depending on the load you've put on those different systems, obviously your body then adapts and conditions itself to handling the workload that we place on it over time. Mm. And that can lead to obviously an array of different conditions.
Okay. When the joints start to go wrong, we're very quickly aware of it and quite painfully so. Is it something that is always going to happen to everyone as part of the natural aging process?
Well, certainly, definitely, wear and tear on the joints and the cartilage does happen to everyone over time. The rate at which that degeneration or drying out or desiccation of cartilage that lines the joints at the joint surface where two bones come together, the desiccation or drying out of the bone, that occurs over time at different rates in different people, different rates in females and males, and it's under the influence of various factors, including things like hormone involvement, for example, in osteoporosis, estrogen withdrawal contributing towards bone quality and the architecture of bone. But in terms of your lifestyle, whether you've been active and run marathons and half marathons, or whether you've been someone that just likes afternoon walks in the mountain, the amount of movement that you actually put the joint through over a period of time does contribute to the lubrication of the joint in terms of the synovium and the synovial fluid in the joint. So the question is, supplement too late or not in terms of taking chondroitin and all these wonderful cartilage-enhancing formulas late in your life? It's actually too late at that stage already. So we need to do it a lot earlier in terms of preserving the function we have and then maintaining movement in the joints to ensure that that lubrication stays.
Okay, so that's quite sobering. So obviously the one thing we can do to help ourselves then is be active from a young age consistently and keep it up. When you say it's too late to start taking the supplements, maybe the better question is, at what age should you start taking the supplements?
Yes, and it's not a specific age as in 60. For example, it's more related to the aging that's occurred. You know, a lot of these, the different products out there tell you what your actual age is versus your virtual age when you do a body assessment and all sorts of screening process. Same with the joints. We look, for example, at the quality of the bone on a simple x-ray. Even on the hands, we can tell the wear and tear on the hands, looking at the joint surfaces, giving us an idea whether you've aged like a 70-year-old or a 30-year-old in terms of your bone surfacing, in terms of the hips, the knees, etc. as well. And there's a whole lot of new techniques now that look at details regarding joint function and joint inflammation, for example, that give us a better indication as to what's happening on a day-to-day basis in the different joints.
Let's talk about the inflammation and specifically arthritis. Can you explain for us what arthritis actually is, for starters?
Yeah, so all the itises, you know, the I-T-I-S just means inflammation. So tonsillitis means inflammation of the tonsils. Arthritis, implying that you have inflammation of a joint or multiple joints at that time. And understanding that the term is not specific to the cause. Arthritis is just basically describing what's happening in the joint. It's not telling you what the cause is. You get rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune disease, which can be quite debilitating and crippling in terms of what it does to the microstructure and architecture at the surface of the joint, causing deviation, ulnar deviation at the fingers where they grow, for example, towards your little finger. So there's deviation to the sides, and as the joints start degenerating and losing their stability, that's what happens. And then, of course, things like osteoarthritis, on the other hand, which is more due to wear and tear, to put it quite simply, where from wear and tear and the type of activities you've done, you would find that you have what's called Hibernian's nodes on the finger, little knobs that occur over time with bone that grows and creates little spikes on the different types of joints. Whether that's on the spine, on your spine between your vertebrae and on the sides of the vertebrae, or on your fingers or hands or even your toes, you'd notice the difference between rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. And blood work obviously is quite important, because you can get autoimmune disease diagnosed on antibodies in the blood as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Susie asking on the SMS line whether any of this is genetic. I know the answer, because my mom, my brother, and myself all have identical arthritic pinky fingers as a starting point.
Yeah.
It can play a role. Does it play a role in both kinds of arthritis?
Yes. So, in terms of rheumatoid arthritis, certainly it's very much stronger link genetically. And the incidence is much higher. I think it's 3 to 4 times higher in women than it is in men. And also a disease that can occur from birth, not only for people typically aged 40 to 60 where it's diagnosed for the first time. Often we only find out about it years later, after someone treating non-specific joint pain for 10, 15 years, but not doing anything about it until the structural changes of the joint have actually occurred, and then seeking help for that.
You mentioned women are more prone than men. Why is that? Is it a hormonal issue or something else going on there?
In terms of inflammation of the joint, certainly, definitely related to that. I think that genetically, I mentioned RA being quite a big one. Just remember what autoimmune actually is. It's where your own body basically attacks its tissue. So instead of it recognizing a foreign bacteria's toxin, it recognizes a protein in the joint, for example, and attacks that protein, destroying your own tissue. The same occurs with conditions of the thyroid and multiple sclerosis, for example, where your immune system basically has a short circuit cross-referencing a specific substance and then attacking that instead of the actual real, it mistakes it for an invading threat.
Interesting question in on the email from Lynn, who wants to know how you know if what you have is actually arthritis. She says, my hands are painful, I can't grip or open things like I used to, and I do have a sort of spur on the bottom of my thumb bone, but I'm a fit and active 71-year-old.
Fantastic.
She adds a comment that, okay, I don't have the context for, but maybe you will. She says, I'm a victim of the drug Ziploc, as mentioned on Carte Blanche a few weeks ago. I don't know the context for that part of it, but she does also suffer from hip pain, she adds.
All right.
So certainly that ticks a lot of the boxes that you would expect from an arthritis diagnosis, but is that enough?
Correct. No, it's not enough, actually. You need to be aggressive with your management and treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. The treatment for osteoarthritis from wear and tear down the line basically is pain relief and maintaining the function you have left, preserving it for the rest of your life, not absolutely reversing it. Yeah. Often if it's a functional thing, you could see a specialist, a hand specialist, foot specialist, to help you get the hand into a more functional position to, you know, to continue with normal tasks every day. But arthritis as such, different types, as I mentioned, you can have a red, hot, swollen joint, which is an acute hot arthritis, or you can have arthritis that's a slow chronic process where you've had pain for longer than 3 months per definition, and that obviously the approach to that would be a different approach to managing an acute arthritis, which could be even due to something like infection, in which case we'll call it septic arthritis.
Okay.
Interesting association with throat infections in children as well, children under the age of 5, it's a medical emergency to not miss septic arthritis of the hip, the knees, the elbows, etc. That's often where the bug that gets into the child's system travels to the joint and then causes an infection in the joint, which can be limb-threatening eventually if you don't obviously drain the fluid that's causing pressure in the joint as quickly as possible. So children that have gait problems and asymmetry with a red-hot swollen joint, not to be taken lightly.
Never heard of that. My oldest child is nearly 15. That's pretty scary.
Glad he hasn't had that, yes.
Okay, we need to have a separate conversation. I think a show all on its own on that one.
Yep.
Okay, so Lynn, her list of symptoms, etc., just to get back to how you actually diagnose, does she need to go to a doctor and have a blood test done, or what more should she do?
Yeah, I think we take a history from her. We'll take a history as to how long the symptoms are, where they've started, one hand, both hands, because that gives us a clue as to what type of arthritis she has. Then we'll actually do a plain x-ray film and look at the bone quality, which will also tell a story of what's going on, and then we'll decide from there whether it's necessary to go and look for things like rheumatoid arthritis or not.
Okay. While we're on joints, the WhatsApp, and I'm sure this will speak for many people, please talk about gout, they ask. What causes gout in a person who doesn't drink alcohol or eat red meat?
It's such a fallacy. Everyone thinks you're an alcoholic if you have gout, and there's so many. I mean, obviously the GNT does contribute over time, but understanding what gout is, it's raised uric acid levels, and that's from foodstuffs that contain purines. So purine metabolism, when they're broken down, they give off uric acid. And that includes everything from red meat, white meat, chicken, fish, tomatoes. So people that think it's only a disease of druivors and biltong are incorrect. It's actually associated with high purine metabolism foodstuffs. And for those lists, you can Google. They're quite a long list of those kind of foods. But obviously, controlling the risk factors you can, like a diet and alcohol, do help. But it's not always due to alcohol.
Okay. Now let's talk a bit about management, and specifically management of pain. Such an important one, because I know, Darren, there can be knock-on impacts here. It's not only about losing function and losing mobility and your ability to do everyday tasks. There can be a huge impact on mental health as well if you're not able to manage the condition, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, the definition of pain, world standard definition of pain, is an unpleasant sensory or emotional experience that is due to actual or potential tissue damage. So sometimes you have the tissue damage, sometimes you're in threat of tissue being damaged, and the different levels and types of pain with the receptors that you have on the different organs, like the skin, for example, with burning pain and aching pain and so forth of the joints, etc. They all have different subtypes of receptors that send a message via the spinal cord in different layers that are highly specialized to the brain, and the brain then has a perception of that and interprets it. Interesting that the brain itself can't experience pain. Doesn't have receptors on the brain itself. That's why we can do surgery on the brain while people are awake without them experiencing pain. It's a fascinating thing that a lot of people don't know.
What's an ice cream headache then?
Yeah, that's a toothpick headache.
Okay.
That's from the teeth. That's it triggers it.
That's
shoots.
Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Brain freeze, on the other hand, I'm still trying to understand.
Yeah, it happens to me all the time. Right, so just a reminder, if anybody wants to ask a question from the audience, raise a hand. And at home, you're welcome to phone in on 021-446-0567. Lots of people asking about supplements, Darren, and which ones work, and in which in rheumatoid versus osteo should you be taking different supplements. I know every medical professional has a different opinion on this, but for what it's worth, you've already said if you're going to take them soon enough.
Yeah.
Which ones do you think might be worth taking?
I think what's exciting now is people are taking collagen, they're taking chondroitin, they're taking calcium supplementation because of depleting calcium and not, for example, some people are on vegetarian diets or some people are going plant-based, they're not doing dairy. So depending on your lifestyle and your choice of diet, you'd have to then look at the profile of what nutrients you are getting in whether they're micro, macro, and you'd have to look for the role of supplementation in your specific lifestyle. So that's important. I think what has to be said is where we are currently in the world, which is exciting regarding food is medicine. We are now understanding that certain foodstuffs are associated with inflammation. We realize that certain foodstuffs in terms of the gut and gut health, you'll hear words being thrown around like the microbiome, prebiotics, probiotics. The foodstuffs that probiotics actually feed on are actually called prebiotics, and how we can influence all that. Also, the center of control as to whether gut health is controlled by the brain or whether it has its own local central nervous system controlling it is also fascinating. So that's where the future of food and the relation between health and wellness and the gut and the importance of diet is actually becoming very apparent. And there is a lot of good research at the moment that's out there, and actually some good findings so far regarding the benefits of understanding certain types of diets for your gut.
Okay. In our last minute, Darren, just to come back to management of the pain associated, particularly with arthritis, but also with other joint pain. There's short-term release in the form of anti-inflammatories and painkillers, etc. Yeah. There are ice packs and hot packs, depending on the kind of pain you're having. But in terms of long-term relief, should anybody who's been diagnosed with arthritis be on any kind of long-term daily management medication?
Absolutely. So maintenance and decreasing chronic inflammation. Before, people that had rheumatoid arthritis could only take immunosuppressive drugs in the form of things like long-acting corticosteroids, which carry a label as long as Table Mountain of side effects, including obesity, moon face, water retention, Cushing syndrome, etc. But in terms of the biologicals, what we call the biologicals in treating rheumatoid arthritis, many people having really good results on that. When it comes to pure pain management, anti-inflammatories as a group have become very important. There's certain dosages you need to be on to ensure chronic inflammation is kept low, but also more importantly to understand that you follow the instructions as to how to take meds, because taking long-standing anti-inflammatories on your tummy, the effect is dire. Gastritis, peptic ulcer disease, gastric ulcers, etc., and bleeding, even bleeding tendencies.
So do it under observation of a doctor and under guidance from your pharmacist.
And the volumes, the dosages. I mean, the addiction part of things like codeine and opiates in pain control is a separate topic, which we might even get onto again another time.
Let's add that to the list for follow-ups. Darren Green, lovely to have you with us here today, and thank you so much for coming through to the Norval Foundation to join us. We will make that whole conversation available as a podcast for those who've tuned in a little bit late and are now sending questions. Please go and listen back to the whole thing.